This is the second interview with Claudia von Kennen. It's October 9th, 2001. I'm Forrest Larson in the Lewis Music Library. I'm pleased to welcome Claudia von Kennen for another interview. Today is October 9th, 2001. I'm Forrest Larson, and it's in the Lewis Music Library. Thank you so much for coming and doing this second interview. Just a real delight to have you here. I'd like to pick up where we left off in the last interview, and we're talking about your teaching at MIT. And you taught for a number of years the Intro to Music course 2160, as it was known then. This is a course where most of the students don't read music. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like teaching that course and some of the goals and purpose of that course?
Yeah, I told it already last time. The thing is this, the most important thing for me personally was that I showed the kids that silence was as important as sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were all the time exposed to continuous noise.
Yeah.
And as Igor Markevich, with whom we worked quite a bit, said, children, silence is music too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted to convey to the classes, because most of this generation cannot listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I started with silence, and then another thing is that not very many of those kids can make music. They have all the time a background, there's always professional, so that means that nowadays music very much is a spectator sport, mm-hmm. as conversation, as sex, as anything.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you look, you gape, but you don't do it yourself. And should I tell them the story about the movie?
Yeah.
Well, and then I told the kids, the students, sorry, that they should see a certain movie. It's an old movie, and starring Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert. It's a story of a poor newspaper man who runs away with a millionaire's daughter. Anyway, it plays during the Depression. And you see the millionaire's daughter and the newspaper man in a Greyhound. And the Greyhound's passengers, they are very poor, they are farmers, they are unemployed people, all kinds of shabby folk. And at the moment, after conversation, they started to sing. And they sang the Daring Young Man and the Flying Trapeze. And there was one sang, the next one got another verse, and the next one got another verse. Everybody took up the refrain. Finally, the driver had one too. The only one who didn't know it was the millionaire's daughter. The newspaperman knew it. And it was absolutely wonderful that Greyhound going through that very arid and poor countryside and those people singing away. And I said to the class, try this with a plane full of businessmen. Never could do it because these businessmen, they're arid. And I went to the music library and got the Fireside Book of American Folk Song. And so I went there, plunked that Fireside Book on the piano, hit the glass around the piano, and for the first time, they sang the Daring Young Man and the Flying Trapeze with all the verses and the refrain. And they looked incredibly happy. And this was, so to speak, the ground, the basis on which I did the 2160 afterwards.
Mm. Well, that's certainly something they'll take away with them. Was there anything about particular pieces of music that you felt particularly important for them to...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For instance, the Resurrexit of the B minor Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Or I emphasized very much on pieces which, so to speak, wake the dead.
Uh-huh.
And the Resurrexit... Then the Réjouissance of the Fourth Orchestra Suite, the D major of Bach,
mm-hmm.
and the Hold on Giovanni, then Duke Ellington, and also...
So which Duke Ellington were you thinking of?
Caravan, for instance.
Oh, uh-huh.
And these kids didn't know. They didn't even know Duke Ellington. So you had to, how you say that, you had to fill that gap. And then I emphasized mostly on music, so to speak. I didn't do a lot of Mahler. I didn't do a lot of Bruckner, because there you really need to be, you have to be more conditioned. And if you confront music for the first time, you have to have great music.
Mm-hmm.
And
so with the Bach, and you said other things about raising the dead. Tell me about what was behind that. That's an interesting concept.
What?
You said you mentioned the movement from the Bach B minor Mass,
mm-hmm.
and you said that there were other pieces about raising the dead.
Raising the dead, exactly.
Tell me what was behind this for you, as far as introducing this to the students.
That's all it says.
Uh-huh.
That puts people in a state of bliss.
Uh-huh.
And that's very necessary, that you start with the biggest pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Or for instance, there is a final in a certain Haydn trio. There is, as I said, there's a couple of jazz pieces.
Yeah.
They do that, and that doesn't mean that they have to be noisy or fast.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain pieces of music I cannot express is otherwise that raise the dead, and that's the one you have to play to the 2160.
Uh-huh. I'll have to, when next time I hear the Duke Ellington Caravan, I'll have to think about that. That's very interesting. Speaking of the Duke Ellington, is there a part of that piece or something that, because I certainly wouldn't have thought of Caravan in Raising the Dead. Tell me.
No.
What's the connection there?
No connection. This
yeah.
is a sh- this is an instinct.
It's an instinct.
Instinct
yeah.
reaction for
yeah.
me. There's certain musics.
Yeah.
There are quite a few,
mm-hmm.
and I cannot show them all to the kids. But I only show those pieces to the kids that are worthwhile,
mm-hmm.
that raise the dead. Because
mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think it's a waste of time.
Okay. Yeah. It's a metaphor. It's not a
mm-hmm.
yeah. Okay. I think I get it now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Here's a question that's probably a little unfair to ask somebody from Vienna, and it's, you could write a whole book on the subject. But the composers Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven
uh-huh.
are obviously Viennese composers, and they're in many people's minds the pinnacle of Western music. How do you, in your own mind, see them in the world of music that you've known for all these years?
Well, they are like sun and rain for me.
Uh-huh.
I don't even discuss them.
Yeah, yeah. But you know how some people kind of put them up on a pedestal,
no.
and it sounds like
no, you live with them.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. And there was a course that you taught. I forgot the course number, but it was called Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven.
Yeah. Everybody taught that, not only me.
Yeah, right. But I remember when you taught that
mm-hmm.
course. Was there a thesis or some underlying themes that you had in mind as a teacher when you were teaching that course?
It's always the same. That I try to expose the kid
mm-hmm.
to the music that
yeah.
raises the dead.
Yeah.
It's, and you have a lot of choices with Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
For instance, the last movement of the septet.
The Beethoven septet.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's a great piece.
Yeah. Or I don't know, the B major sonata, the piano sonata by Schubert.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that concept, music that raises the dead. That's I'm not going to forget that. When you taught at MIT, did you coach any student chamber music groups?
No, I didn't. I didn't. Not that I remember. Maybe, wait a moment. I think sometime in the beginning once, think I coached a few that played a couple of parts in the Brandenburg Concerto, but that's long ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you came the year after Marcus Thompson came.
Right.
And did he start the MIT Chamber Music Society right away?
I can't remember. You have to ask him that.
Yeah.
But it was pretty soon after he came.
Yeah. Did you have any dealings with that as far as helping the program run?
No.
Mm-hmm. No. Did you coach any vocal groups?
Yeah, I coached individual singers, and then I was really hired and supposed to do opera.
Right.
But for all kinds of private business, which had nothing to do with me, it never came to pass.
Yeah. So what are some of the vocal groups that you
I didn't
coach?
Coach vocal groups. I coached a couple of individual singers.
I see. Okay. So there wasn't any madrigal groups or anything
that you coached? No, I didn't coach.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Not here.
Yeah. There was for a time at MIT something called the MIT Early Music Society.
Yes.
I don't know much about that. Do you?
I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Who started that? Do you know?
No idea.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
That's something I certainly want to look into. And you've mentioned this somewhat in passing, and I'll just ask it more directly. The place of music at MIT.
Mm-hmm.
This is a school that is that specializes in teaching science and engineering. And what place do you see music in the educational curriculum here?
Well, Alessandro Scarlatti said that music is the daughter of mathematics.
Uh-huh.
And it is very important that these kids know something about music, learn how to confront music, exactly as they should learn how to confront language, literature, painting, whatever. Because when you are nothing but a scientific specialist, when you become an absolute specialist, then you become an idiot in the sense of the Greek word which says only busy with himself. And not anymore turned toward the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important that the kids learn that. And as I say, that they learn to respect music. And you respect music if from time to time you shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have to learn.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about there being a major in music at MIT here?
Good.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Because the curriculum here is different in just the way that MIT is. Do you think that the music major at MIT can offer something different than a music major at a traditional liberal arts college?
This I wouldn't dare to answer because that depends on the individual, how he handles the knowledge he gets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That depends entirely on what he retains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some people who have questioned if MIT should offer a major in music, and I just from time to time I hear various discussions on that.
Yeah, so it depends what that means, major in music. Does it mean musicology or does it mean performance?
Mm-hmm.
And that should be very clear cut.
Mm-hmm.
Because musicology as such is rather a field of sterility, I think.
Uh-huh.
Because you don't talk about music so much.
Yeah. I had a feeling that you had some thoughts like that. Is there any more you'd like to say about that? Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's like literature.
Yeah.
You read a book, but you don't read all the time what other people say about that book.
Yeah. You know, but obviously you respect some musicologists like Lowell Lindgren.
Oh, yeah, but
yeah,
that's different.
Are there other musicologists that you've known that that you'd like to talk about or anything? Yeah.
Who have known? I've known Otto Erich Deutsch.
Uh-huh.
And he was rather fearsome and very much specialized.
Wow. Did you study with him?
No, Evans, no.
No, no.
No, I knew him when I was about 10 years old.
Uh-huh. So. Wow. What was his instrument?
He didn't play any instrument. He did the Schubert catalog. And when you have a Schubert,
of course.
It's D, that's all.
Right. I just didn't know if he...
No, he knew everything about music, but he couldn't play the C major scale.
Wow. I wondered about him. The only time that I actually heard you play was you played the Bach violin and harpsichord sonatas with
mm-hmm.
Rosemary Harbison
mm-hmm.
in the chapel.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played with her much? And tell me what repertoire you've.
I have played only Bach with her. Right now, she wants to play again.
Uh huh. So you'd only played the Bach.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done that a lot with her over the years?
No,
no?
We played from time to time,
yeah.
But now I hope that I can play it.
Yeah. I distinctly remember that concert. It was really, really beautiful. Did you ever play with John Harbison?
With John? No.
No. I just wondered.
I sang a couple of times when he was conducting some group here in here at MIT.
Wow.
A couple of Bach cantatas.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Almost forgot.
You know, were you singing the chorus or were you...
Yeah, sure. It was a very small chorus.
Mm-hmm.
It was even...
Do you remember which cantatas they were?
Which was... I have to think it over.
Yeah. Have you ever played any of his music,
Mm-mm.
John's music?
No.
Did you ever hear John play the viola? At one time he was
Yes.
Wow. Do you have any memories of that? And on what occasion might you have heard him play?
It was some chamber concert, but I cannot remember. I cannot remember what it was. I heard him play the viola.
Uh-huh. Was
but
it a concert?
Long ago.
Yeah. Was it a concert at MIT?
No, it was, I think it was at Emmanuel.
Uh-huh, Emmanuel Church.
Mm-hmm.
And was...
But he was mainly my boss.
Uh-huh. Was that with something conducted by Craig Smith at the time?
I think so, yeah.
Uh-huh. When John Oliver taught here at MIT,
mm-hmm.
did you work at all with him?
No, but I had a lot of very, very good conversations with him.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't work with him.
Yeah. You didn't work with him even outside of MIT?
No.
Yeah, okay. Any thoughts or comments about John Oliver?
No, I always thought that he was an excellent musician.
Yeah.
But I wasn't particularly neither away from him nor very close
mm-hmm.
to him, but I appreciate him very much.
Yeah. Is there any performances that you heard him conduct that are memorable?
Yeah, a couple of choral works
mm-hmm.
where he was conducting, had trained and coached the chorus. I think it was the Creation ones.
Uh-huh, the Haydn Creation,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Now, apart from studying a particular instrument or voice, do you have any thoughts about how musicians should be trained? You have a very interesting background, and for you, it's not unusual because was common in Europe. But and having taught music for a number of years, any thoughts about that?
You mean how music should be taught?
Yeah.
This is very hard to answer because that depends from what background the kid is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be good to create a certain environment where the kid is not all the time exposed to noise.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how that is possible.
Yeah.
That depends on the family life. if somebody comes home or turns on the TV and there is noise from the very beginning, it's a far more difficult atmosphere to have music than in another family where there is dialogue
right.
or silence.
If somebody, say, is learning to be a pianist or a singer, how do you see in their education learning music theory and ear training, and any thoughts about how that should be integrated into training of a musician?
That is very hard to answer because it depends. Does the kid go to a music school,
Well,
or does he learn music in school, or does he start taking music at MIT?
Yeah.
You know, this taking is already a thing that makes a European uneasy.
I see.
Because they say, for instance, I took French. That doesn't mean a thing if you take something.
Right.
And whether it's language or music, I think that nobody can learn anything without drill. And for instance, you don't take a language. You learn the irregular verbs. And without the irregular verbs, you cannot speak a language.
Mm-hmm.
And without being able to play Three Blind Mice in any tonality, you cannot play the piano,
right.
as long as you don't have a sense of interval. And this, if that isn't taught, there are certain elementary things that have to go in the bones of these kids. And if that is not done, then you don't have any music education.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your training, particularly as a young child, that was just part of, say, if you took piano lessons, you were given ear training and stuff like that as part of it? It wasn't separate?
No, ear training wasn't a particular thing.
Uh-huh.
It was a matter, of course, that you heard these things.
Mm-hmm.
And, let me see. I know, for instance, at the academy, we had Professor Grave, Victor Grave. He was a wonderful guy. He was the piano accompanist of every famous singer that came to Vienna. And at the same time, he was professor at the academy. And he said that all singers are idiots. And he made a course, which was called Musical Propedeutic. Pre-education from 7:30 till 9 in the morning, because there were no classes. Mm. So we had to come at 7:30, three times in the morning, and there we were put through the paces, sight singing and everything. And at the same time, he always gossiped to us about the famous people he was accompanying the evening before. And so we sang whole snatches, I don't know, Figaro or whatever, and everybody had to sight sing the part. And I never made a mistake, never ever. And one day he says, "Oh, how do you do it?" And I said, "Well, I figured a keyboard." And he said, "You what?" And from that moment on, I was more or less dead for him, because he had realized that I was not only hearing but seeing. That means I was cheating.
Uh-huh.
He did not admit that you can have the intervals with your eyes as much as with your ears.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I was all right, but
yeah.
I still remember how scandalized he was when I told him that the keyboard helped me.
Yeah, and that's often taught to it being cheating.
A violinist or a singer should not help the keyboard. He found the keyboard an absolute crutch.
Wow. As a pianist, is there any performance tradition that you have an affinity towards?
Chamber music.
Yeah. And as far as a particular pianistic technique, I guess that's what I was getting at. There are various kind of...
I have a harpsichord training, and I'm not very good at thundering octaves.
Can you tell me how you got interested in playing the harpsichord? How that came about?
Yeah, because we had a wonderful harpsichordist called Isolde Algrim.
Mm-hmm.
And
at the conservatory?
At the academy.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to study with her. Mm-hmm. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm. In the previous interview, you had mentioned Wanda Landowska as mm-hmm. an influence. Did you ever hear?
No.
No?
Wanda Landowska was not a great influence on me.
Uh-huh.
Sure, I heard her play very often, and also very, very many recordings. And to me, she is a little bit too brutal.
Uh-huh.
But this is an individual feeling.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so you actually heard her play a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Who are some other harpsichordists that you heard play that
Fernando Valenti,
uh-huh.
whom I like very much.
Mm-hmm.
And Igor Kipnis.
Uh-huh. Did you ever hear Gustav Leonhardt or Nicholas
yes.
Harnoncourt? And do you have any
sure.
thoughts about those figures?
Leonhardt, yeah. I mean, he's a great musician, but Leonhardt does things which I don't understand. For instance, last year in Amsterdam, he did the B minor mass in the so-called Westerkerk, in the Western Church.
Uh-huh.
We ran away after the second part immediately because it was such an echo that you heard still the first measure when he was already on the third.
Mm-hmm.
It was impossible, you couldn't. And I wonder how a musician like Leonhardt could do that in this church.
Mm-hmm.
And they said because he likes to conduct. But I think this is a poor reason.
Uh-huh. Oh, there's a recording of Harnoncourt conducting the B minor mass,
mm-hmm.
and the echo in that recording is so much that I can't hear the polyphonic lines.
Yes,
and,
exactly. You cannot hear a thing. And I remember when we did the St. John's Passion in Washington,
uh-huh.
we stuffed the whole. It was the church of Catholic at the campus of Catholic University.
Yeah,
we stuffed the whole church with old clothes.
Yeah,
and it went all right.
Uh huh.
But we couldn't understand how a guy like Leonhardt could do a performance like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And Arnon Kur, I'm still very, very mad at his magic flute.
you want to get into that? Or I was delighted to find from the first interview your interest in Renaissance music and a lot of the performance that you've done.
No, we did a lot.
Did you ever sing madrigals?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Is there a performance tradition in Vienna to just informally sing madrigals?
Yes. Some people just get together
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. sing madrigals,
yeah.
Sure.
And you kind of grew up doing that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Do you have any particular ideas about vocal performance and practice in singing Renaissance music? I mean, things like vibrato and voice quality. Any particular ideas about that?
Well, I'm probably prejudiced in the way that we sang them with Grossman. Mm-hmm. We sang, and we didn't worry about vibrato and non-vibrato. I can only tell you that 2 years ago, I was in Florence,
mm-hmm.
and they played, not Renaissance, but they played the Fifth Brandenburg
mm-hmm.
in a church called Or San Michele. And, of course, they played the Fifth, and the girl who played the harpsichord was dying with fear because of the cadenza.
Yeah.
But they did not observe all kinds of historical considerations. They fiddled away, and it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It was just music. And the formal laws of Bach's music came out wonderfully. And when we were singing, not Bach, but Renaissance music, etc.,
okay.
we didn't care one bit about non-vibrato or the vibrato. We just sang,
mm-hmm.
and the music sang.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not even care about theory.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of great music happens that way.
Sure.
Yeah. The music of Max Reger seems to have gone out of fashion. Was it ever performed in Vienna when you were growing up?
No.
No.
Very, very little. Some organ music was performed. Mm-hmm.
None of the cantatas? Or,
No.
I just wondered.
Not so very. Mm-hmm. No, Max Reger was a kind of embarrassment.
I just wondered because he had kind of a his time, and I just wondered what that was like. Did you ever sing the Bruckner Latin motets?
Yes. Yes, we sang the Bruckner motets, and we sang the F minor mass.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any particular feelings about the Bruckner vocal music?
Oh yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah. The motets are just
great and difficult.
Yeah. In the previous interview, you mentioned performing Monteverdi with soprano Susan Larsson. Is there anything more you'd like to say about her as a singer? And
Susan's a great singer.
Yeah. And just anything else about performing with her?
Yeah, I learned enormously from her.
Tell me about some of what you learned from her.
Certain ways of reaching certain notes.
Uh-huh.
Because you never end learning. I learned a lot from Grossman, and Grossman made me the voice, so to speak. But I learned from Susan to be able to have it more reliable.
Uh-huh. And that's so important for musicians, or for singers particularly. Any other things about musical interpretation or anything like that you learned from her? Sounds like she's been a big
influence. No, we're more or less on the same line, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Who are some of the other Boston area music colleagues of yours that you care to mention?
Nobody.
Did you ever work with Craig Smith?
No, I didn't.
No.
I wanted to, but somehow it never came to pass.
Mm-hmm.
I know him well, but I've never worked with him.
Uh-huh. I just wondered. He's such a big presence in the vocal music scene.
Sure.
Here. To change the subject a little bit, there's two novels that you wrote, Moon Clock from 1979 and The Inheritance from 1983.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want to get into the specifics of them, but I wanted to ask you, they show, particularly I'm thinking of The Inheritance, a real intimate knowledge of 16th century medical practices, medical education, and treatises, and I'm just curious, that must have taken a lot of research on your part to, is that something you had kind of grown up knowing?
No, that was simply that once I got somehow in a university library, there was the 400th centenary, whatever it was called, of Andreas Vesalius.
Uh-huh.
The great anatomist who died in 1564. There was a wonderful book which is called The Fabrica, and I looked at this, and it interested me incredibly because it's a very, very exciting book where he tells you how to cut a body up and what to learn, etc., etc. And then I had to write. Because they told me in the university life there is publish or perish. And so I thought I could only write about things I know something about.
Mm-hmm.
And that limited the things already quite a bit. And then somehow this story just grew together.
Uh-huh.
I have absolutely no medical background, but I read a lot about Vesalius. Because as a person, he interested me.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with any professional research.
Yeah. you also show, at least to my my mind, a real amazing knowledge of very practical, you know, daily affairs, you know, cooking, hygiene, clothing, social relationships, and social mores. That it seems like there's a real intimate knowledge with that, and it wasn't just a matter of kind of opening up a book and getting a. There's nothing superficial about your what seems in that book. There's some fairly subtle stuff in there. And I was just really impressed with that.
Oh, thank you. No, but you know, I don't like for you to read Inheritance because it has been totally followed up by the editor. Uh-huh. And it is not the way I wrote it.
Mm.
Just throw it away.
Mm. Is there any, since I have read it, is there any thing that you'd like to just say about what might have been missing or?
Yeah, I have rewritten it totally. But in German.
Uh-huh.
And I might have it out at Gerido in Amsterdam. I'm not sure, but it's very possible.
Mm-hmm.
It exists in German, the real mm-hmm. manuscript, but not in English.
Yeah. Is there a general way you can characterize the your version and the version that was published in English?
Yes. The version in English was corrected and did all kinds of phrases I never put in, and was very badly done. And my version right now, the German version, is the one mm-hmm. I want to publish.
Did they change the plot or
no,
any of the
no,
story?
No, they changed no plots.
Uh-huh.
But it was amateurish. It was it did all kinds of mistakes and corrections, and then the title was awful. The jacket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not very happy with this thing.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a particular interest in 16th century Spanish history?
Oh yeah, sure.
I'm
an Austrian. Don't forget.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any reason that you chose that time period for this this novel?
Yeah, because I wanted to write about Vesalius, and he was very much involved in all this business between Netherlands and Spain.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Any thoughts that you might want to share about the other book, Moon Clock?
Yeah, the Moon Clock is a Viennese book.
Yeah.
They didn't follow it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Moon Clock, that was exactly the first book I wrote, and that was also the thought I can only write about things I know something,
mm-hmm.
and I know something about Vienna,
mm-hmm.
and Vienna in the Turkish Wars and so on.
What kind of research did you do on that?
Research?
Was it stuff you just learned as you had grown up?
Mostly. Oh, I did a little research at the townhouse in Vienna, mm-hmm. old town records.
Because mm-hmm. there's a real knowledge that you have of some of the political affairs and social mores is it's just I found that very very interesting and I learned a great deal.
we learned that in school.
Uh huh. I see.
This is nothing particular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. See, to somebody not from Vienna, that's...
yeah, well, yeah. this is all local.
Yeah.
The locals know it.
Yeah. Wow. Is there anything else that you've published or written that you can...
Yes, I wrote a furious article against Peter Sellers.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And that was published in the leading paper in Amsterdam,
uh-huh.
translated into Dutch.
Wow. You care to mention any more about that or your thoughts about Peter Sellers?
I don't want to start my thoughts about Peter Sellers.
Yeah. So that was published in Dutch. It's not a...
Oh, yeah. It was published in Dutch.
Yeah.
When
so
he... when he started, I don't know what he did. They had a big fat article, and he was very proud.
Uh-huh. Was it in regards to, he's done some productions of operas, was it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I know other people who've been quite upset with some of the things he's done. Yeah. Can you tell me about some of the musical activities that you've been up to these last few years? And
musical what?
Musical activities, things you've been doing since you've retired.
I do nothing but work the keyboard. That's all I do.
Yeah. So just playing at home and and you must.
And I do some chamber music with a friend in Amsterdam, cellist, and mostly I work for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Learn trios.
So what music do you do with the cellist?
What did we do? We did the three Bach, you know, the Gamba sonatas.
Yes, yes.
And then I'm learning the Haydn trios. Cool. And I hope one of these days we play them with Lynn, which is a very nice violinist.
Did you ever do the Brahms sonatas with the
No.
No. Do you ever, have you played much Brahms?
No.
No.
Sang a little Brahms, uh-huh. But not played.
Uh-huh. Any particular reason?
No.
Yeah. Just wanted to...
Just came about.
Yeah,
It's not what I want to learn, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you like Brahms, but it's just not something you want to learn.
Yeah, it's not something I cannot live without.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, these are the
That's
basic questions that I had. Is there any concluding thoughts that you'd like to to share or anything?
No, I don't think that. I think that as long as one is alive, one doesn't have concluding thoughts.
Yeah. I just thought with the interview here and well, you've been most generous in sharing your thoughts, and it's been a delight to have you.
Thank you
again very much.
Let's go. What time is it?
Okay.
Five.